lasted a little more. They had to believe they would recover it in time. And as Kallak goes, Kindi and Chi went into the dining room. She had hope that they would. The five of them, Jaina, Kallak Ghost, Turvash, Paind, and Kindi, flung themselves into work and research. Kindi returned to Dalaran, where, with Ronan's blessing, she had access to the library. Jaina envied her the task. "I remember when that was my duty," she told Kindi, giving the gnome a quick hug. "There was nothing I liked better than poring through those old tomes and scrolls and simply learning." She felt a slight pang. The new Dalaran was beautiful, but she no longer belonged there.
"It was probably more fun when the fate of the world didn't rest on your research," Kindi said morosely.
Jaina had to agree. Paind, who was in charge of Jaina's spy network, departed when she heard the news.
"I will go into the field and learn what I can," she said. "My spies are diligent, but they might not understand what they need to look for in this situation."
She eyed Kallak Ghost.
"I assume you may be safe here with this person, my lady."
"I think my own skills and those of a former aspect will keep me safe in the event of any threat." "Yes, Paind," Jaina said. Her voice held no amusement, as she knew how seriously Paind took her duties. The Night Elf's gaze flickered to Kallak, then back to Jaina. Paind saluted.
"Lady."
Once Kindi and Paind had departed for their respective errands, Jaina looked at Turvash and Kallak Ghost, nodded briskly, and said,
"Let's get to work."
"Kallak, earlier you said that you were able to track the focusing iris. Why haven't you simply followed it? Why come to me?" He glanced down, looking slightly sick.
"I said I had been able to follow it. The trail vanished shortly after I reached Kalimdor."
"What?"
Turvash was irritated.
"It couldn't just stop."
"Yes," Jaina said, her voice heavy. "It could. Whoever stole this thing must have a great deal of power at their disposal if they could stand against five dragons. But they didn't know enough about it at that time to completely conceal the theft. That's why Kallak was able to track it."
"My thoughts exactly," Kallak said. "At some point, they either did learn enough about it or found a mage who was sufficiently powerful to hide its emanation from me."
Turvash put his face in his hands for a moment.
"That's someone very powerful indeed."
"True," Jaina said. She lifted her chin in slight defiance of the bad news. "They may have a powerful mage, or more than one, but so do we. And we have the benefit of someone who knows everything about the focusing iris. We'd better settle in for a bit while Kallak brings us up to speed."
"What do you need to know?"
"Everything," she said firmly. "Don't just give us the basics. We need all the details. Even something that seems insignificant could prove useful. Turvash and I must know what you know."
Kallak Ghost smiled ruefully. "That could take some time."
It did. He talked until it was time for the midday meal, when they paused briefly to eat, and then until dinner, and continued after that. Even a dragon's voice, it seemed, became hoarse if he spoke too long. The hour grew late, and that first night the three all stumbled off to their various bedchambers with heavy-lidded eyes. Jaina didn't know how the others slept, but as for herself, she had nightmares. She awoke the next morning, feeling groggy and unrested. Her ritual did not restore her as it usually did, and the sky was overcast and lowering. She felt a heaviness sink into her chest and sighed. Not wanting to look out on the gray day, she let the curtain fall and went downstairs. Kallak Ghost gave her a warm smile as she entered the little parlor, but it faltered as he noticed her pallor.
"Didn't sleep well?"
She shook her head.
"You?" "Well enough. Though I was troubled with bad dreams. I blame your chef. That dinner tasted delicious, but obviously there was a fragment of an underdone potato hiding in there somewhere."
Despite the direness of the situation, Jaina found herself chuckling a little. "Then you are welcome to conjure all our meals, and that will teach you to complain," she said, chiding him teasingly. He gave her a look of mock horror. Their eyes met, and they both sobered. It seems wrong to joke, Jaina said with a sigh. She began the preparation of the tea, measuring it out precisely as she always did, and setting the kettle to boil.
It might seem wrong,
Kallik said in agreement, helping himself to the eggs, boar sausage, and hot porridge, despite his earlier teasing disparagement of the chef's abilities.
But it isn't.
Surely humor is inappropriate at times. Jaina fixed her own plate and sat down next to Kallik.
At times, he said, digging into the sausage. But joy is never inappropriate. Not real joy. Not the sort of lightness in the soul that makes the burdens bearable.
He gave her a sideways glance as he chewed and swallowed.
I didn't give you and Kindi the full quote that I... Well, heard isn't the right word. Received, possibly, from Norgannon.
The kettle began to sing. Jaina rose to tend to it, pouring tea for both of them.
Really? Why not?
Miss Kindi didn't seem in the right frame of mind to receive it properly.
She handed him the tea and sat back down.
And I am?
An odd look crossed his face.
Perhaps.
Then tell me. He closed his eyes, and again his voice changed, became deeper, became other.
I believe that you will find that my gift to you is not just a profound duty, which it is, but also a delight, which it is. May you be dutiful and joyous both.
Jaina felt a strange twinge in her heart at the words. She realized she'd been silent, staring into Kallik's eyes for several seconds when he quirked a blue eyebrow, inviting a response from her. She looked down at her bowl, stirring her porridge.
I was telling Kindi the truth. I enjoyed studying, she said, stammering a little. I loved it, actually. Loved everything about Dalaran.
Her lips curved in remembrance.
I remember humming as I went about my tasks, she added, laughing as her cheeks warmed with embarrassment. The scents, the sunlight, the sheer fun of learning and practicing and finally mastering spells, of curling up with cheese and apples and scrolls.
Joy,
Kallik said quietly. She supposed it was. It was sweet to linger in that long-ago moment. Then another memory crystallized. Caelthus had approached her one such day, and then later, Arthas. The smile faded.
What happened?
Kallik asked gently.
The sun went behind a cloud.
Jaina pressed her lips together. Just, we all have ghosts. Maybe even dragons do.
Ah, he said, regarding her with compassion. You think of ones you loved and lost.
She forced herself to eat more porridge, though the normally tasty breakfast food was now like sludge in her mouth, and nodded.
Perhaps of Arthas.
Jaina swallowed hard, then started to say something to change the subject, but Kallik pressed on.
We do all have ghosts, Jaina. Even dragons, even aspects. Grief for her ghost nearly destroyed Alexstrasza, the great lifebinder herself.
Coriolstras, she said. Crassus. I saw him many times when he was at Dalaran, but never really knew him. I had no idea who he truly was.
Hardly anyone did. And yes, Coriolstras. He gave his life to save all of us, and at first we thought him a traitor.
Including you and Alexstrasza?
We didn't want it to, but doubt crept into even our hearts.
Kallik admitted this reluctantly.
And I have my own ghosts, too, Jaina. One is a human girl. With,
he added, giving her a little nod,
fair hair and a great heart. She was so much more than just a girl, though. She was something beautiful and profound and unspeakably powerful. But her time as a simple young woman infused that power with compassion and love.
Jaina didn't look at him. She knew of whom he spoke, Anvina, who'd been the Sunwell incarnate. Jaina was familiar with what had happened to Anvina. The girl, who was not a girl, had sacrificed one form for her true one, and in doing so, sacrificed her life.
Another is a dragon, lovely as ice and sunlight, who was intended to be my mate.
He seemed to recall Jaina's presence and gave her a quick smile.
I don't think you'd get along with her particularly well. She never understood my interest in the,
lesser races?
I've never called you that,
Kallax said. And for the first time, Jaina saw a spark of anger in the blue dragon.
Those who are not dragons are not lesser. It took Tirigosa a while to see that. You were simply different from us, and maybe in some ways better than us.
Jaina raised her golden brows. How in the world can you possibly say that? He smiled.
Cheese and apples and scrolls, he said. And thus you knew true, simple joy when you hadn't even entered your second decade. That, to me, makes you astonishing.
Chapter 6. It was not long before the explicit directives came. Bane hated what he was about to do, but if he refused, Garrosh would turn on him, and the Tauren, with the full force of the rest of the Horde behind him. Bane harbored no illusions of the idealism of the Forsaken, the Blood Elves, or the Goblins. They had their own agendas. The Orcs were traditional friends to the Tauren, but there were few malcontents. And the trolls simply couldn't risk it. If the Tauren defied Garrosh so blatantly as to refuse this order, they would stand alone. Bane crushed the missive in his hand and turned a bleak expression to Hamul Runetotem.
Let us prepare, the High Chieftain said. At the very least, this part of the war Garrosh is getting us into has some scent of justice behind it.
The orders had been clear. Bane was to bring at least 2 dozen braves, Kodos and weapons of war, and approach Northwatch Hold from the west. The trolls would join them, though the trek from the Echo Isles to Mulgore was a long one. The orcs would be marching from Orgrimmar, and the Forsaken, the Goblins, and the Blood Elves would take ships to meet them in the port town of Ratchet, and then they would all move swiftly to rendezvous with the Tauren at Northwatch Hold. Once, there'd been only the dry land of the Barrens between Mulgore and Northwatch, and a little town called Camp Tarajo. Back then, the greatest problem had been fighting the Quillbor. Now, Bane would need to march his people past the ruins of Tarajo, and through what had become known as the Fields of Blood. Following the orders he so disliked, Bane amassed his people on their side of the Great Gate as quietly as possible. They stood silently, as instructed, the only sound the slight creaking of armor and the occasional stamp of a kodo. Bane could feel the tension. He marveled that the Alliance on the other side could not sense it as well. He had sent several scouts ahead to make sure that the Alliance recon would be taken unawares, and they had all reported back that only a few kept watch at this hour. 2 Tauren, taking care not to be seen, ascended the viewing platforms, and made their own longer-distance reconnaissance. They could see better than humans in the dark, and besides, the Alliance soldiers were often foolish enough to keep campfires burning.
"High Chieftain," said one of the scouts, forcing his voice to be soft. "The trolls! The hills are thick with them. They only await your order."
"The number of soldiers is no greater than usual, judging by the fires," said another. "They are not expecting an attack."
Bane's heart ached at what he was about to do.
"Report back to Vol'jin. Tell him his people may attack at will. Once they have engaged the Alliance, we will open the Great Gate and follow up with our own weapons."
The scout nodded, turning and climbing up the hill at the juncture where the gate met it. Bane looked out over the assembled crowd of Tauren, their shapes barely visible in the light of the few torches they bore. there were several dozen braves and many others who would serve vital purposes when the conflict came in but a few seconds. Druids, shaman, healers, and other fighters of all kinds. He lifted his arm, making sure that it was seen, and waited. His heart beat quickly. 1, 2, 3. And then came the blood-chilling war cries. The trolls had attacked. Vane snapped his arm down. From the other side of the gate, with a clang of weaponry, the defiant shouts of humans and dwarves, and the thud of ballista arrows striking home. On this side of the gate, two tauren grunted and strained, their massive bodies trembling with the effort as the thick ropes were laboriously pulled and the gate groaned. The Northwatch soldiers were taken completely by surprise. Tauren braves streamed through, bellowing and hurling themselves into the fray. The humans and dwarves didn't stand a chance. They were vastly outnumbered by furred and green and blue-skinned bodies, and their weapons, while dangerous, needed time to be directed and prepped. There was no time for anything but desperate and ill-fated resistance. One foolish soldier charged Bane himself, crying, "For the Alliance!" His simple military-issue sword snapped as Bane swung his mace. The piece went flying, flashing brightly in the faint light, and then was swallowed up by darkness. Bane swung again. The soldier's chainmail armor offered no protection from the blunt instrument. The body hurtled a distance away from the force of the blow. There were a few more shouts from Tauren and trolls, and then the clang of weaponry ceased.
"Trolls, hold!" Bulgin ordered. "Tauren, to me!" Bane shouted.
There was a pause, and then whoops of triumph filled the night air. Bane looked around. It was over, mere moments after it had started.
"This bodes well for the attack," Bulgin said.
Bane shook his head.
"Not if any Alliance escaped. Under the cloak of night, they could warn Northwatch Hold."
"Then we best be about getting to Northwatch."
They took a moment to select a few scouts to go ahead and report back as the rest of the troll and Tauren army regrouped and began the march east toward Northwatch. Bulgin pulled his raptor up alongside Bane's Kodo as they went.
"After we left Orgrimmar," Bulgin said, "some of the orcs that were nodding their heads when all Eatrig was talking been kinda absent."
Bane felt a jolt surge through him.
"Garrosh is executing those who don't agree with him?"
"Not yet. Dame Corcoran, especially that gray-skinned one, they be walking through the streets, just waiting to overhear something they don't like. If they do, well, some they arrest right on the spot. Some they come for all quiet. That mushroom seller, he close shop for a few days. He come back looking all beat up, like he be in the wrong end of a fight. And some, they don't come back at all."
"Political prisoners?"
Bulgin nodded.
"We trolls be keeping our mouths shut."
Bane grunted.
"Perhaps if Garrosh knew what the Corcoran are up to. He is a hothead, but surely he cannot be ordering this."
Bulgin made a dismissive sound and waved a gangly arm in disgust.
"No one gets to Garrosh. I hear that even Eatrig only sees him when Garrosh feels like it, and then that boy surrounded by his big old bodyguards. He be all, 'The Horde can do this, the Horde can do that.' All confident without any reason for it. I can't say for certain that he knows what's going on, but I can't say for certain that he don't. Either way, I be more scared of Orgrimmar these days than the darkest voodoo."
"Then there is no stopping him, no reaching him, no reasoning, and insanity abounds."
"That's about the size of it, mon."
Bane growled softly, looking over his troops. An idea was forming. It was audacious, it was risky, and it might cost him dearly. But it might save the Tauren people. It might even save the Horde.
"Why can't we find anything?"
The words burst as if of their own volition from Jaina, and she wished them back as soon as she had uttered them. Kallik, Turvosh, and Kindi who'd returned from Dalaran with two entire trunks full of scrolls, magical items, and books that the Kirin Tor thought might help, all looked up from their various studies and stared at her. She bit her lip.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I'm usually not like this."
Tervash gave her a kind smile.
"No, lady, you're not," he said. "But then again, this is hardly a usual situation."
Normally, she was both idealist and pragmatist. Practical was what Arthas had dubbed her. The combination was part of what made her such a skilled mage. Her curious mind worked methodically around a problem until it was solved. It served her well in diplomatic endeavors, too. While she cared deeply about the outcome of what she worked toward, she also worked toward it. She didn't just stomp her foot, or weep, or say whiny things like, "Why can't we find anything?"
"The Archmage is correct," Calico said. "We're all under a lot of strain. Perhaps we should take a brief respite."
"We broke for lunch," Kindi said.
4 hours ago," Calico reminded her. "Since then, we've not stretched or moved or done anything but stare at books. We may have lost the ability to even spot something if we do come across it."
Jaina rubbed her aching eyes.
"I apologize again. Calic may have hit on the very reason for... why we haven't found anything."
She put a little extra emphasis on the words to let them all know that she was fully aware of how she had sounded.
"I don't think..." Kindi began.
"You're young," Tervosh said. "You can go forever. We old folks need our little breaks. You're welcome to stay here and keep perusing the documents, Kindi. But I'm gonna go and work in the garden for a bit. There are some herbs that need harvesting."
He rose and pressed his hands to his back. There was an audible crack. Jaina knew she too would creak as she rose after sitting in one position for too long. She and Tervosh were not, as he had joked, old folks, but the seemingly endless energy of her youth, which had sustained her through her ordeals with the plague and the war with demons, appeared to elude her now that she'd reached 30.
"Care to show me around?"
asked Calic, interrupting her thoughts. She started.
"Oh, yes, of course."
She rose, attempting to cover her embarrassment at being caught wool-gathering. "I am very proud of the order and harmony we have here in Theramore. The cataclysm damaged the city, but we rebuilt with a will." They descended the long, winding stairs of Jaina's tower and stepped out into a surprisingly sunny day. Jaina nodded to the guards, who saluted smartly, and to the mounted lieutenant, Aiden. Calicos looked about with open interest. "Over there is Foothold Citadel," Jaina said. There was a training area on their right as they walked by where Theramore's guards fought against practice dummies, their swords thunking against wood. Coming from their left, however, were the bright sounds of steel clashing against steel as the young recruits trained in the open air. Their commanders barked orders while priests watched carefully, ready to call upon the light for healing the instant anyone was injured.
"It's rather martial," Calic observed.
"We're at the entrance to a very dangerous swamp on one side, and the ocean on the other," Jaina said. They continued to walk, turning away from the practicing warriors and passing the inn. "We've got a lot to protect against."
"The Horde, obviously."
She gave him a look. "We are the most martial alliance presence on the continent, but honestly, the majority of the danger comes from the wildlife and various unsavory characters." Calic put a hand to his chest and widened his eyes in feigned shock and hurt. Jaina smiled. "Don't worry. The only dragons I take issue with are the black dragons in the swamp," she said. "The Horde seems to keep to itself, as long as we do. And that's an arrangement I can live with, although there are many who don't understand that."
"Is the Alliance pressing for war?"
Calic asked quietly. Jaina grimaced. "Ah, now you've found a sore spot," she said. "We'll discuss that later. How are your blues faring, Calic? Most magi may resent them, as Kindi did, but I know you've undergone a great deal. First the Nexus War, then finding and losing an aspect, then this theft."
"Now you have found a sore spot," Calic said,
but his voice was kind.
My apologies, Jaina said. Their path was leading them out of the city, the cobblestones becoming less well-tended and slightly muddy. I meant no offense. And here I am, supposed to be a diplomat.
No offense was taken, and a good diplomat can often see clearly what is troubling another, Kallik said. It has indeed been difficult. For so many ages, dragons were among the most powerful beings in Azeroth. We alone had the aspects to guard our flights in the world. Even the least of us had a life that must seem impossibly long to you, and abilities that made many of my race feel superior. Deathwing, what is the phrase you humans use? Gave us a good helping of humble cake.
Jaina fought to keep from laughing.
I think the phrase is usually humble pie, he chuckled.
It would seem that, even though I like the younger races more than most of my kin do, I still have a lot to learn.
Jaina waved her hand. Human slang should not be high on your list of things to master, she said.
I wish I could say that I had nothing more pressing to do, Kallik replied, sobering again.
Halt! A voice cried sharply. Kallikko stopped, looking at Jaina with curiosity as several guards approached with drawn swords and axes. Jaina waved at them, and they immediately put away their weapons and bowed as they recognized her. One of them, a fair-haired, bearded man, saluted.
Lady Jaina, he said. I wasn't informed that you and your guest would be passing through. Do you wish an escort?
The two magi exchanged slightly amused glances. Thank you, Captain Wymore. I appreciate the offer, but I think this gentleman will be able to protect me, Jaina said, keeping a straight face.
As you will, my lady.
Kallik waited until he had passed out of earshot, before saying in a completely serious tone of voice,
I don't know, Jaina. I might be the one who needs rescuing.
Why, then, I shall come to your rescue, Jaina said, keeping her face as serious as his. Kallik sighed.
You were already doing so, he said quietly.
She glanced up at him, her brow furrowing. I'm helping, she said. I'm not rescuing.
In a way, you are. You all are. We're not what we were. I want so much to protect my flight, to take care of them.
Something clicked in Jaina's mind. As you wanted to protect Anvina. A muscle twitched in his cheek, but his steps didn't falter.
Yes.
You didn't fail her.
Yes, I did. She was captured and used, Kallik said,
his voice harsh with self-loathing.
Used to try to bring Kil'jaeden into Azeroth. And I couldn't save her.
You had no control over that, if what I understand is true, Jaina said softly, feeling her way. She wasn't sure how much Kallik Ghost was ready to share with her. You were possessed yourself by a dreadlord, and once you were freed from that horrible existence, you went to her.
But I couldn't do anything. I couldn't stop them from hurting her.
Yes, you did, Jaina said, pressing him. You let Anvina become what she really was, the Sunwell. And because of your love and her courage, Kil'jaeden was defeated. You were selfless enough not to deny her her destiny.
And the aspects were destined to lose our powers in order for us to succeed against Deathwing. I know, Kallik said. It's not wrong what is going on, but it is hard. It is hard to watch their hope failing and...
To know yours is failing as well. He turned sharply to look at her, and for a moment she thought she had gone too far. But it was not anger in his eyes. It was anguish.
You, he said, are not nearly as old as I. How is it you are so insightful?
She hooked her arm through his as they walked. Because I'm wrestling with the same thing.
Why are you here, Jaina? He asked.
She raised a golden eyebrow at his bluntness.
I've heard that you were considered one of the finest magi of the Order. Why are you not in Dalaran? Why are you here, standing between swamp and ocean, between Horde and Alliance?
Because someone has to.
Truly?
His brow was furrowed. He came to a stop and turned her to face him. Of course, she retorted. Anger rose in her. Do you want war between the Alliance and Horde, Kallak? Is that what the dragons have decided to do with their time these days? Go around stirring up trouble?
His blue eyes showed hurt from the blow her words had landed. She winced.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
Kallak nodded.
What did you mean, then?
He asked. But there was no rancor in his voice. She stared at him mutely. She didn't know. Then words came tumbling out from somewhere.
I didn't want to be part of the Order after Dalaran fell. After Antonidas died. Arthas killed him, Kallak. Killed so many of them. The man I'd once thought I would marry. Had loved. I couldn't be around that. I had changed, and the Kirin Tor had changed too. They're more than simply neutral. I think, perhaps without realizing it, they may look down on anyone who's not one of them. I had learned that to really foster peace, you have to embrace the people, all of them. And although I was the last one to suspect it, I do have diplomatic gifts, she said earnestly.
The hurt was gone from his kind face, and he lifted one hand to stroke her golden hair, almost as if he were comforting a child.
Draenor, he asked, if you believe that, and I am not saying you are wrong, why are you trying so very hard to convince yourself?
And there it was. He had plunged a dagger in her heart, keen and sharp and so painful that she gasped as if it were a physical blow. She stared up at him, unable to drag her gaze away, feeling tears sting her eyes.
They don't listen, she said, barely audible. No one listens. Not Varian, not Thrall. Certainly not Garrosh. I feel that I am standing alone on a cliff, and the wind snatches the words from my lips even as I speak them. No matter what I do, no matter what I say, it is all pointless. It has no meaning. I have no meaning.
As she spoke, she saw a sad smile of recognition touch Kallak's lips.
And so this we share, Lady Jaina Proudmoore. Kallak said. We fear being of no use, of no help. All that we have known to do is useless.
The tears spilled down her cheeks. Gently, he wiped them away.
But I do know this much. There is a rhythm, a cycle to such things. Nothing stays the same, Jaina. Not even dragons, so long-lived and supposedly so wise. How much, then, must humans change? Once, you were an eager young apprentice, curious and studious, content to stay in Dalaran and master your spells. Then the world came and ripped you away from your safe place. You changed. You survived, even thrived, in the new role of a diplomat. You had puzzles and challenges, but of a different variety. And that is how you served. This world...
He shook his head sadly, looking up into the sky.
This world is not as it was. No thing, no one is as it was. Here, let me show you something.
He lifted his hands, his long, clever fingers moving. Arcane energy sparked from his fingertips. It formed a whirling ball, hovering in front of them.
Look at this, he said.
Jaina did, forcing her foolish tears. Where had they come from? Down, and focusing on the little orb of arcane magic. Deftly, Kallak touched it. It seemed to shatter, and then reform, with a difference.
There! It's a pattern, Jaina said, marveling.
Watch again, Kallak said.
A second time he touched it, a third. Each time the patterns became clearer. There was a moment when, baffled and enraptured both, Jaina wondered if she was looking at a gnomish schematic rather than a ball of arcane energy. Signs and symbols and numbers whirled, then jumbled together, then arranged themselves in a certain formation.
It's so beautiful, she whispered.
Kallak splayed his fingers and drew his hand through the orb. As if it were mist he disturbed, it fragmented, then reformed in still another way. It was a ceaselessly shifting kaleidoscope of magic, of precise patterns and order.
Do you understand, Jaina? He asked.
she continued to stare, almost hypnotized by the exquisite patterns of formation, shattering and reconfiguration. "It's more than spells," she said. He nodded.
"It's what spells are made of."
For a moment, she didn't follow him. Spells had incantations, gesticulation, sometimes reagents. And then understanding smote her so powerfully, she almost stumbled with a revelation. "It's math."
"Equations, theorems, order," Kallax said, pleased. "Combined in one way, they are one thing. In another, something altogether different. It is fixed and mutable, as is a life. All things change, Jaina, whether from the inside out or the outside in. Sometimes with only a single shift in a variable."
"And we are magic, too," Jaina whispered. She tore her gaze from the ineffably beautiful swirl of lyrical, poetical math and began to form a question.
"Lady Jaina!"
The shout startled them both, and they turned to see Captain Wymore galloping toward them on a bay horse. He pulled the beast up so sharply, it reared and mouthed the bit.
"Captain Wymore, what—"
Jaina began, but the guard cut her off.
"Paynd has returned with news," he said,
panting from the short but intense ride.
"The Horde, they are gathering, coming from Orgrimmar and Ratchet, as well as from Mulgore. It looks like they are set to converge on Northwatch Hold."
"Oh," Jaina breathed, her heart, an instant ago, so buoyed by the beauty and insight Kallikos had shared with her, now heavy in her chest.
"Please, no, not this, not now."
Chapter 7 It was old Dirty Pete's turn to keep watch in Corporal Tegan's expedition encampment, located on the edge of the mysterious jungle overgrowth, which had seemingly sprung up overnight. Despite his fondness for a mug of a brew, on, well, nearly an hourly basis, the white-bearded dwarf knew enough to take his assignments seriously. He hadn't had anything to drink since nightfall, and it was nearly dawn. He patted his blunderbuss, which he loved, even if it was becoming a bit erratic these days. Unkind folks said it was old Dirty Pete who was erratic, not his gun, and sighed. Soon his watch would be over, and he could open up that cherry grog he'd been saving for. There was a rustle in the undergrowth. The old dwarf got to his feet with more speed than most would have given him credit for. All kinds of strange critters could be attacking. Raptors, plane striders, those big, nasty flower or moss things. A woman, wearing a tabard that sported a golden anchor, stumbled forward, stared at him a moment, and then collapsed. Pete barely caught her as she fell.
"Tegon!" roared Pete. "We got ourselves a problem!"
A few seconds later, one of the guards was attempting to bandage the young scout's injuries, but Pete thought, sadly, that it was pretty clear the little missy wasn't going to pull through. She reached out frantically, grabbing on to Hannah Bridgewater's arm as Hannah bent over her.
"Horde!" the scout rasped. "Doran opened the gate, heading east, think, Northwatch."
Her eyes closed, and her black hair, matted with blood, fell back limply against Pete's broad chest. He patted her shoulder awkwardly.
"You got your message through, lass," he said. "You're done good. Take your rest now."
Tegan, hurrying up in response to Pete's call, shot the dwarf an angry look.
"She's dead, you idiot!"
Gently, Pete replied.
"I know, laddie, I know."
2 minutes later, the fastest one among them, Hannah, was running as quickly as her long, strong legs would carry her, east to Northwatch, praying to the light that she wouldn't be too late. Admiral Tarlin Aubrey was, as usual, awake before dawn. He rose swiftly, splashed water on his face, dressed, and shaved. As he met his own eyes in the mirror, he saw that they had circles underneath them, and frowned as he carefully shaped the beard and mustache that were his only concessions to physical vanity. Over the last few days, the Rage War clan of orcs had appeared to be regrouping, what was left of them. Skirmishes had broken out, during which it had been reported that a few of the orcs had shouted insults along the lines that the Alliance would get what was coming to it, or had grunted defiant comments as they died, such as, "My death will be avenged." Nothing out of the ordinary, not really. Confidence and arrogance marked almost every orc in Aubrey's experience, and the Rage Roar in particular. And yet, he had not gotten to his position without being alert to all possible dangers. It was odd that the Rage Roar had come back after being defeated, and he needed to know why. He had sent out spies to confirm if the Horde was beginning to move toward war, and especially if its sights were on Northwatch Hold. None had reported in yet. It was too early. Aubrey broke his fast with a banana and some strong tea and headed to his usual patrol route. He nodded a greeting to Signal Officer Nathan Blaine, who saluted smartly, despite the early hour, and together, the two men looked out over the sea. Dawn was full on, and the ocean and dock were painted in shades of rose, scarlet, and crimson, the clouds hovering above limned faintly with gold here and there.
"Red sky in the morning, sailors take warning," Aubrey mused as he sipped his tea.
"Red sky at night, sailors delight," Blaine finished.
"But we're not sailing today, sir."
He gave the Admiral a lopsided but still respectful grin.
"True enough," said Aubrey. "But we're always sailors. Keep an eye out, Nathan."
The Admiral's eyes narrowed a bit.
"There's something..."
He pursed his lips, shaking his head, then turned and descended the tower quickly. He left the sentence unfinished.
"A tad superstitious, isn't he, no?" said a dwarven guard to Blaine.
"Perhaps," said Nathan, turning back to the bay. "But I bet you still always step onto a ship with your right foot first, don't you?"
Said the dwarf,
his cheeks flushing a bit red.
"Aye, no sense in inviting bad luck now, is there?"
Nathan grinned. They were a sea of green and brown, moving steadily down the Gold Road through the Northern Barrens toward Ratchet. Most of the orcs were on foot, though a few of the elite, including the Corcron, Malkrock, and the war chief himself, rode wolves. Some were mounted on Kodos, the better to manage the drums of war that were sending a trembling pounding through the very earth itself. Word had gone ahead, of course, so that at each town more could gather and join the march on Northwatch. Those who would not participate in the active battle, and they were few, the elderly, the very young, the mothers of suckling babes, nonetheless ran out to cheer Garrosh and his unquestioned victory. Garrosh, tall and proud on his black-furred, muscular wolf, raised Gorehowl in response to the cheers, but seldom dismounted. The pace of the march enabled the army to be seen from far enough away for the warriors, magi, healers, and shaman to fall in step without slowing down the river of horde that flowed along the road. As they left the crossroads, where their numbers had swelled, Malkrok brought his mount alongside Garrosh's. He thumped his chest in a salute, and Garrosh nodded acknowledgement.
"Any word?"
Garrosh asked.
"It seems that Bane is indeed loyal to us, for the present," said Malkrok. "He and the trolls slew the Alliance scouts that hovered at the Great Gate, and now march east to Northwatch, as they said they would."
Garrosh turned to Malkrok.
"I commend you for your watchfulness, Malkrok," he said. "Surely now you see that I hold Bane in the palm of my hand. He is devoted to his people, and would not risk them. He knows that I suffer no such hesitation when it comes to the Tauren. His protectiveness of them is a trait to both admire and hold in contempt. And," he added, "to use."
"Even so, he spoke out so brazenly," Malkrok growled.
"Indeed," said Garrosh. "But he comes through when he is needed, as do Vol'jin and Lorthamar and Sylvanus."
And Gallywex.
Garrosh made a face.
He is out only for profit, and is as subtle as a charging Kodo about it. As long as the Horde lines his purse, he will be loyal.
Would that all our allies were so transparent.
Leave Bane be for now, said Garrosh.
This is the task you set me to, Great War Chief, said Malkrok. To root out those who would defy your leadership and thus become traitors to the glorious Horde.
But if we are too suspicious of our allies, their patience will grow thin, retorted Garrosh. No, Malkrok, the time is now to fight the Alliance, not each other. And what a fight it will be.
And if Bane or Vol'jin or others do plot against you?
If you have proof rather than irritated words, then, as always, you have free rein, which I know well you've already exercised.
Malkrok's gray lips curved in a smile that was as malevolent as it was ugly. The ships, Forsaken, Blood Elf, Goblin, had come early to Ratchet, and Garrosh could barely contain his excitement at the sight. Ratchet's harbor was crowded with them, and Garrosh's hot anticipation of the certain bloodbath to come was quelled slightly as he realized that it would take some time to unload all the troops and supplies he had requested. This was the part of being war chief that he found tiresome, but it couldn't be helped. The arrival of the orcs did not go unnoticed, despite the activity in the harbor, and cheers went up. Garrosh waved and dismounted as three figures approached. One, he knew, the corpulent and sly trade prince Gallywix. The others, a blood elf and a forsaken, he did not, and he frowned.
"War Chief Garrosh," said Gallywix enthusiastically, his piggy eyes bright and his arms outstretched in welcome.
By the ancestors, Garrosh thought, with a stab of repugnance, did the goblin think to embrace him?
He forestalled the gesture by turning to the blood elf. She had golden hair and pale skin, and wore the bright, gleaming armor that marked her as one of her people's paladins.
"Where is Lorthamar?" Garrosh asked bluntly.
Her full lips pressed together in irritation, but when she spoke, her voice was calm and pleasant.
"He has sent me to oversee the Blood Elf troops. My name is Kalentir Bloodblade. I trained with the Lady Liadrin, and I served under Ranger General Halderon Brightwing."
"Neither of whom is here," said Malkrok,
stepping protectively near Garrosh.
"Instead, we have this little third-ranking whelp."
Kalentir turned coolly to Malkrok.
"You also have two ships filled with blood elves willing to fight and die for the Horde," she said. "Unless you are so sufficient in numbers and supplies that our feeble support will not be necessary."
Garrosh had never much cared for blood elves, and this female was getting under his skin.
"You have a chance to prove your people's worth in battle today," he said. "Take care you do not squander it."
"My people are familiar with war and battles and sacrifice, War Chief Garrosh," snapped Kalentir. "You will not find us lacking."
With that, she turned on her heel and marched back to the docks. Her plate mail.
How can she even bear it on such a tiny, twig-fragile frame, Garrosh wondered,
clanking slightly as she strode.
"War Chief,"
interjected Gallywix. But Malkrok silenced the loquacious goblin with a single glance. Garrosh directed his attention to the Forsaken, who, in contrast to the arrogance displayed by the Blood Elf, bowed almost obsequiously low. He was a warrior of sorts, if the blade sheathed at his bony hip was any indication. He had no hair, it apparently had rotted off by this point, and his skin was the pale green color of decay.
"Captain Frandis Farley, sir, commanding the Forsaken units in the name of Sylvanas Windrunner, in service to the Horde and your good self," he said in a rasping voice.
While his jaw moved properly to form the words, once he had stopped speaking,
it seemed to drop into a permanently gaping expression.
"And where is your dark lady?" asked Garrosh.
Farley lifted his head, and his eyes gleamed with yellow light.
"Why," he said, sounding surprised, "holding reserves and standing ready to command when, after your inevitable victory, the Horde marches on Theramore."
The response was audacious and cunning, and Garrosh threw back his head and laughed.
"Perhaps we should send you in to simply talk to the Lady Jaina, and she will voluntarily surrender completely."
"My war chief flatters me, but that would deprive the Horde of a well-earned victory, would it not?"
"Fight as skillfully as you speak today, Frandis Farley, and your war chief will be well pleased."
"I shall endeavor to do so."
Some foul substance gathered at one corner of the slack jaw and dripped to the hard-baked earth.
"Now, with your permission, I will see to unloading the cargo my lady has sent."
Pleased with the banter, though still irritated at both Sylvanas and Lorthamar for sending underlings instead of coming themselves, Garrosh finally turned to Gallywakes. The goblin had dropped his eager-to-please mask and chomped sullenly on his cigar, the top hat slipping over his low brow.
"You, trade prince, seem to be the only one who has come to Ratchet to lead your people into battle. I will remember this."
The mask slipped back into place immediately.
"Well, I'm not so much leading my people into battle as overseeing getting them here and settled and making sure the supplies you requested were properly delivered, if you understand my..."
Garrosh absently patted Gallywix's top hat and walked down to the dock to get a better view of the ships and cargo. At first, it would seem a strange choice. Other than warm bodies to physically fight in the battle ahead, the ships were filled not with swords or bows or armor, but with carefully stacked timbers, securely tied with ropes into tidy bundles, and carts bearing rocks. But Garrosh nodded his approval. He sighed, forcing down his impatience, and indicated that some of the larger, more physically powerful orcs should give the slender blood elves and the, in some cases quite literally, skin and bones forsaken, some assistance in unloading the cargo. Soon, perhaps within hours, Northwatch Hold would fall. Victory was, after all, the Horde's destiny. When Hannah Bridgewater, her clothes soaked with sweat and her legs trembling with exhaustion, was stopped by one of the Northwatch guards patrolling the western path, her message was relayed immediately to Admiral Aubrey. He swore, a single harsh word, then recovered. To the guard who had brought him the news, he said,
"Notify everyone to prepare for battle. The Tauren and trolls are approaching from the west. Shore up our defenses there and..."
"Sir!"
yelped Blaine. He stood, his eyes fixed on the signaller on the dock below, who was frantically waving the semaphore flags.
"Horde ships are approaching from Ratchet, 6 of them, fully armed battleships."
"6?
"Aye, sir."
Blaine strained for more information.
"They appear to have the markings of goblin, forsaken and blood elf."
Aubrey didn't reply. Trolls and Tauren first, and now the Forsaken, the Sindhurai, and the goblins. The only ones missing were...
"Orcs," he snapped. "Tell Dockmaster Lewis to send some scouts to Ratchet. They'll have to dodge the remnants of the Rage Roar, but they're used to that."
He should have known the instant he heard the word Tauren that they would not come alone. The Tauren army pressed forward in an attack before, not after the late General Hawthorne had ensured that the civilians of Camp Taraho would be allowed to leave unharmed. It wasn't like them. He should have known the real threat would come from the north, from Orgrimmar. As for the battleships of the other Horde races.
"Tell cannoneers Weston and Smythe to fire at will as soon as those ships are within range. We'll need to keep their troops from landing." "Aye, sir."
Aubrey's mind was racing. How would the orcs manage it? The Tauren and trolls approached by land, yes, The other races by sea, yes. But there was no way that hundreds of orcs would be able to charge Northwatch Hold en masse directly from the north. The Rage Roar orcs had been a thorn in his side, but they had never been able to bring in many reinforcements. Their strongholds were merely small, jutting islands between the Hold and Ratchet. An army could never possibly... He felt the sound before he heard it. It was not cannon fire. Light knew they'd grown used to hearing that over the last few months. No, this was different. A deep trembling of the earth. For a second, Aubrey and most of the others, still raw from the tumult during the cataclysm, thought it was another earthquake. But it was too regular, too rhythmic. Drums. Drums of war. He reached for the spyglass hanging at his hip, hastened to the wall of the tower, and looked to the north. Until this moment, the Rage Roar stragglers had been glimpsed milling about near the base of the Hold, sometimes even attacking the Northwatch guards in reckless, usually fatal charges. Now, there was no sign of them.
"Belay that order to send scouts," he shouted to Blaine. "The Rage Roar have returned because they've joined with the Horde orcs. They'll be..."
The words died in his throat. He could see them now, cresting the hill, a great wave of orcs, clad in everything from the cloth robes of their shaman and warlocks to mismatched pieces of leather to imposing plate mail. They lugged carts of wooden planks and boulders. The Rage Roar had joined them, obviously expected, and the great green brutes heaved and tossed the boulders into the shallow waters with enormous splashes and roars. The infernal drums kept pounding, pounding, and the enemy was close enough so that Aubrey and the others could hear war chants being sung in Orcish. Behind the orcs were catapults, battering rams, other massive engines of war. But how could they possibly think? It was when the orcs began laying the planks over the stones that Aubrey realized the insidious cleverness of the tactic.
"Shore up the gates!" he shouted. "What little there is left of them," he thought. "Prepare for attacks on three fronts, from the harbor, from the north, and from the west."
They'd been able to handle the Rage Roar. They'd been able to handle the few torn skirmishes that erupted from time to time on the fields of blood. But this...
"Light preserve us," he whispered.
Chapter 8. The Torn and Trolls had continued their march eastward, as night yielded its reign to dawn. They had given the Alliance's forward command a wide berth, and so far had met with no resistance. Forcing their way through the overgrowth, they found the remains of an encampment, with the campfire extinguished but the coals still warm. There was no way to tell who had built it. Horde and Alliance both were in the area, and there was always someone wandering from one place to another. The cataclysm had caused upheaval in lives, as well as land. They continued cautiously, but Bane was beginning to wonder, was it possible that their approach was yet undiscovered? They found a small sacred site of the Torren, and Bane called a halt.
"This is a sign," Bane said. "Here is where our brothers and sisters were released from their bodies. Here we will pause to prepare our hearts for battle and our souls for possible death. Our troll brethren, this is not your ritual, but you are welcome to approach here to contemplate life and death and those who have gone before. And," he added, "we will ask our ancestors to bless us and to guide us to do what is right and best for our people."
Bane did not suggest asking the ancestors to bless what they were about to do, for he was not at all certain they would approve. He did not think Cairn Bloodhoof would. There was a mixture of fierce battle anticipation and unease in the gathering of Torren and trolls.
Bane knew his people well and could sense their divided loyalties. Loyalties that were in conflict in their leader's heart as well. After a few moments, where some chanted, some knelt in prayer, and others simply stood,